No doubt. Hey, baby, from KBS. It's 10 minutes after 8. I still remember. It was 1989, and I heard this.
Oh, I got a live one here.
I saw that in high school.
And to me, when I think of Batman, I think of cool. I think of crime fighter. I think, wow, what a great movie. But if you grew up in the 60s, maybe you remember a different kind of Batman.
Bam, pow.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe if you read the comic books, you had a different feel as well. Well, joining us on the phone right now, we've got the executive producer, the boy who loved Batman, Michael Usland, joins us. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
I can't believe your story. So here you were, a kid watching Batman, you read the comics, and then you saw it on TV, and what happened?
I was horrified. I couldn't believe that my favorite superhero of all time, who I knew as a true fanboy, was created to be a dark and serious creature of the night stalking criminals from the shadows, was being portrayed as a funny, pot-bellied, pow-zap, wham, sacrificial lamb to Andy Warhol and the gang at the Peppermint Lounge in New York.
So
and
you didn't like
that
it.
At that moment, yeah. I made my own little young Bruce Wayne vow and said somehow, someday, some way, I would find a way to show the world the true, dark, and serious Batman and eliminate from the collective consciousness of the world culture those three awful words, pow, zap, and wham.
So then what did you do? You bought the rights to the film franchise?
Yeah, 1979, which was a little difficult considering I was a blue-collar kid growing up in New Jersey. I had no money to buy my way into Hollywood. I knew no one in Hollywood. I had no relatives in Hollywood. And I had to figure out, how do I get up off the couch, burning with this passion to do this, and make my dream come true, when, as I soon found out, every door was slamming in my face. Ultimately, every single studio in Hollywood turned me down. They thought I was crazy. They told me it was the worst idea they ever heard to do dark and serious comic book superhero movies. And what I thought would be a slam dunk wound up taking 10 years. It became a human endurance contest for me till we got that first movie made in 1989.
Now, I mean, was there not a point? I mean, because as you mentioned, blue-collar kid growing up, here you are, you're working for a living. Do you not say, oh, my goodness, after 9 years, maybe it was the wrong decision?
Well, when everybody's telling you you're nuts and everybody's telling you you stink and your ideas are terrible, there comes a point in time where you do start to wonder, is the whole world right and am I wrong? And it tests your mettle. You have to look deep inside. And I decided, no, I believed in myself. I believed in my work. And I held on by my fingertips and continued to knock on those doors till my knuckles bled.
I loved that first Batman movie.
Thank you.
I absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought everything about it was great, including the way Prince did the theme song and mixed in the clips from the movie. I mean, everything about it was that your vision?
It was my vision, and more importantly, and all the credit and all the accolades go to a genius by the name of Tim Burton. It was Tim Burton's directorial vision and a vision he knew how to execute that really truly deserves the credit, because it was revolutionary at the time. There had been no movie like this ever. Mm-hmm. And he had to get audiences to suspend their disbelief and really seriously believe that there's a guy out there like Bruce Wayne, so driven and obsessed to the point of being psychotic, that he would get dressed up in a bat costume and go out and do it. And the genius that's Tim Burton succeeded in that.
Your new book is called The Boy Who Loved Batman, A Memoir. We're on the phone with Michael Usland. And, Michael, let's go back. We were talking about 1989, the movie. Now, the next one comes out next July, doesn't it?
Yeah, The Dark Knight Rises comes out July 20th of next year. And to be in a position over a 35-year career where I have the chance to work with three geniuses, Christopher Nolan, the director of Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises, is a true genius, and I think should be the first director in the 21st century studied in every film school.
Really?
He has raised the bar for all comic book films, because when you leave The Dark Knight, for example, you don't have to say, oh, gee, that was a great comic book movie. For the first time, you can just say, that was a great film. And it's Christopher Nolan who deserves all the credit for that.
Now, how did he, I mean, we went through the first couple of Batmans, and then, I don't know, there was a couple that were, not bad. But then when The Dark Knight came out, it was like, wow, it was a complete rebirth almost. How did you change that direction?
There again, you talk about the incredible creative vision that a director has, where he approached the dark and serious Batman from a completely different viewpoint than Tim Burton had, wanted to convince audiences that Bruce Wayne was real, that they could join him in his quest, in his Lost Horizon journey of self-discovery, where Gotham City was real, where the Joker could be real today, a terrorist who places no value whatsoever on human life. And for him to be able to do that and make these films resonate with so many audiences and with the themes of it being so impactful, where critics are calling it the most important post 9/11 movie made to date, it's pretty amazing.
So now you had a lot of struggle to get to the Batman, but did things get easier after that once you got the first one under your belt, or did you have to kind of continue to work on them?
Struggle.
Well, it's a two-part question. Yes, things get easier when you have a success like that. All of a sudden, instead of you knocking on everyone's door, they start to call you. So that was a seminal change career-wise. But I had to be in the trenches every day for 35 years convincing Hollywood that comic books are not a genre that's hot at the box office one summer and cold at the next. It's a source of great stories and characters, just like books and plays are. I had to convince them that comic books and superheroes are not synonymous, that anything you can find in books and literature, you can find in comic books and graphic novels. And, Jane, a lot of people today don't even realize that there have been movies based on comic books like A Road to Perdition, A History of Violence, American Splendor, The 300. So that was an important part of my quest as well.
Do you have any other comic book heroes about to come out?
Well, coming up soon, we are working on two of my favorites, Doc Savage and another one, The Shadow. I continue to be 16 years old. And someone asked me recently at a college I spoke at, well, what exactly is your job? And I said, well, really? Every day I report to a sandbox and I play with my favorite toys. That's what I do.
Good for you. That sounds fantastic.
You are living the life, Michael. Thank you so much for being on the show. All the best with your new book and, of course, with all the movies. And the book is called The Boy Who Loved Batman, a memoir, a true story of how a comic book obsessed kid conquered Hollywood. Love it. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.